State officials now say they don't know if anyone at Lincoln Hills notified parents and local officials about attacks and sexual assaults involving teenagers at the troubled prison. The scandal blew up late last year when federal and state investigations into the facility became public.
Patrick Marley's been covering the story for months. He joins us now to share the latest news. He's a state capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Patrick, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Rob.
Well, before we get into the newest revelations, Patrick, it has been a while since we've covered this story here on Central Time. Can you just give us the basics, remind us what's at stake in this ongoing investigation?
Yeah, we've only known about it for a few months, but this investigation's been going on for more than a year. It started in January of 2015 at the youth prison in northern Wisconsin. It's the state's only youth prison. Long list of crimes that they're looking into that they believe may have occurred, including child neglect, prisoner abuse, sexual assault, destruction of public records, overuse of pepper spray. It started out with the State Department of Justice. Now the FBI is involved, and the FBI has actually taken over the investigation.
Now these new findings, the state saying, yeah, people at the correctional institution have not been telling parents, not been telling county officials the details of attacks, of assaults at this facility. What do we know about that?
Yeah, so these are children who are held up there, most of them. There are some who are over 18, but most of them are under 18. And when anybody's injured, they're supposed to let their parents or guardians know, Child Protective Services, you know, the counties from which they came from. And we found in many cases that we learned of that either these people weren't notified or the state simply didn't keep a record if anyone was notified, raising questions about whether it had actually happened.
And you heard from parents of inmates at this facility, of some of the youth there, saying they found out not through official channels about assaults that their children had been involved in.
Right. A lot of times they would hear maybe from the child themselves, or they might hear from another inmate up there who would write a letter to let them know what had happened. So they heard these sort of back channel things. What really got this investigation rolling in late 2014, Milwaukee County had heard some claims that risks had been broken up there by staff, and also some concerns about the education that they were being provided. And only after they pushed the issue with the Department of Corrections did an internal investigation begin that snowballed into this criminal investigation.
And with this lack of notification, do we know yet what went wrong, where things went wrong, where people weren't notified when they were supposed to be?
Well, it was in their policies that they should be doing this. It just simply wasn't happening, and we don't know where that broke down. You know, it's there's supposed to be a process for this happening, and it just either wasn't happening in many cases, and then in other cases it either wasn't happening or it wasn't being documented.
I want to get into the bigger picture now in this ongoing investigation. As you mentioned, it started as an internal investigation by the Department of Corrections. It then went to the state's Department of Justice and the FBI. Who's in charge? Who's running this investigation now?
The FBI is now running it. It was the State Department of Justice through all of 2015, and then in January, it was either December or January the FBI got involved, and then only recently they took the lead of the investigation.
And why the FBI, since this is apparently an internal state matter in a lot of ways?
Well, the federal government has jurisdiction in a couple of areas. One, civil rights abuses could be at play here. That would give them an ability to look into this. And then also there's something called the Prison Rape Elimination Act, which gives them authority over sexual assaults that happen in incarcerated situations.
Now, looking back, some people have been worried about this since before this investigation began, including a judge in at least one county. How are we starting to reconstruct who knew what when?
Well, yeah, so this Racine County judge wrote a letter that we discovered in 2012. There had been an incident up there where a youth said that he was sexually assaulted and then hit so hard that he lost consciousness. And it was hours before he was taken to a hospital. And when Racine County learned about this, they followed up on it, and someone at the prison told them, well, we had a basketball game that day. What did you want us to do, stop the basketball game? And this alarmed Racine County officials that such a cavalier attitude could be held. The judge ultimately wrote a letter to the governor of the state and said he had never seen anything in his many years as a judge quite like this, and said that he would think very hard about ever sending someone to Lincoln Hills again. And subsequently, Racine County stopped sending youth there for a time and has now continuing to not send people there.
And now there's talk of Milwaukee County doing the same thing, and that's the bulk of the youth who are at this facility.
Right. There's about 250 youth up there, 170 or so who come from Milwaukee County. Milwaukee is actively looking at withdrawing the children it sends up there. It does not yet have a plan as to where it would house them, and it would need to develop that before it could take them out. But this would cause the state to really have to look at how it could continue to function with this facility, with losing so many of the youth that it has up there now.
Talking to Patrick Marley of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about the latest details in the ongoing Lincoln Hills Juvenile Correction Institution, the scandal there. Come up, we'll pick up our conversation, learn more about the ongoing investigation and some of the political fallout. We pick up our discussion now with Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reporter Patrick Marley, looking at the latest details in the scandal at the Lincoln Hills Juvenile Correctional Facility that's run by the Department of Corrections after an internal investigation, as Patrick's been telling us. It was picked up by the State Department of Justice and now the Federal Bureau of Investigation looking at this. Patrick, there have been a lot of people either put on suspension or who have left their jobs directly related to or potentially related to this scandal. Can you talk about what kind of fallout there's been?
Yeah, since late 2014, there's been 36 people who have been put on paid leave. A couple of those were almost a year on paid leave. Eventually, those two, one was fired, one resigned. We don't know exactly why everybody's on paid leave. They say that there are 20 that are related to this investigation. It appears that there are some others who may be of sort of similar type concerns. But what we do know is there's 36 who have been put on paid leave in the last year and some months.
And in your reporting that I've read, there seems to be some dispute over whether this is all just a matter of people at the lowest levels directly working with the youth at this facility, some bad apples, versus a culture where supervisors were involved and higher-ups, things like that. What kind of things are you hearing in both directions?
Well, I think in the early stages when we learned of this, there was an attempt to say that this was limited to a couple of rogue employees. But as I say, there's now 36 employees who have been put on paid leave. Some of those have gone back to work. Some have resigned. Two or three have been fired. Many of them, the investigation continues. So it's a little hard to believe that it's just a couple of people, that there's perhaps cultural problems there. The issue we talked about earlier on notification of parents and others, that's higher-level staff's responsibility to make those kinds of contacts. It's higher-level staff's that make the determination about when to go into a child's room if there's concerns about their behavior, when to contact law enforcement, when to make decisions about getting somebody to a hospital. So it's clearly some of the problems there are not limited to the lowest level employees, but go further up the ranks.
And going even further up the ranks, the Department of Corrections chief left his job very recently with no statement that it had anything at all to do with Lincoln Hills. But is that are people generally thinking that there is some kind of connection there?
It's hard to. You know, Ed Walz is Secretary of Corrections for another couple of weeks, and he says that he's leaving because it's time to let fresh eyes look at the facility. But he's come under a lot of scrutiny for how this has happened and how the department responded to it.
And are we seeing changes in the Department of Corrections and at Lincoln Hills now, even amidst this investigation, to try to prevent similar problems?
Well, you know, yes, they said that, for instance, they recently changed their policy on notification, or sort of beefed up their notification policy. But that came 13 or 14 months after this investigation started. You know, the one incident that came just before 50-some agents and attorneys for the state raided the school in December involved a door being slammed on the toe of a youth and quite a serious injury sustained from what we understand. You know, that happened after almost a year of investigation up there when officials, you know, criminal investigators had been up at the facility fairly routinely. That seems to have been the moment that prompted them to say, if that kind of thing can happen when we've already got eyes on the place, we really need to increase what we're doing up there.
Now, there's been some reaction here in Madison in the state legislature. Senate Minority Leader, Democrat Jennifer Schilling, calling for legislative hearings on the scandal at Lincoln Hills. What's been the response to that?
So the Republicans control the legislature. They have been very resistant to holding hearings or having an audit of the Department of Corrections. They say it's too early to for the legislature to get involved, and they should let the investigators do their work, and then if they identify problems that are more systemic, then they can address them at that point. But I think that the Democrats in the minority are clearly going to be making an issue of this and trying to shed more light and getting some sort of legislative investigation started.
As we mentioned earlier, Patrick, a lot of the inmates at this youth correctional facility up in northern Wisconsin are from Milwaukee County. I know one of your colleagues at the Journal Sentinel reported on a community meeting talking about this in the Milwaukee area. Judges, other community leaders, a lot of people very angry about this. What have you seen in the response to this situation in the Milwaukee area?
Yeah, clearly Milwaukee County officials are very upset. Chief Judge Maxine White has really called for some serious changes. Chris Abley, the county executive, has wanted to make changes. The Milwaukee mayor has wanted to make changes. Abley's opponent in the upcoming election is State Senator Chris Larson. He's called for changes. So the officials from Milwaukee, I'm not sure the exact changes that they want, but they want to see this problem dealt with very seriously and systematically as quickly as possible.
And finally, on Wednesday, the Senate Committee on Judiciary and Public Safety is holding a public meeting about John Litcher, who's nominated to serve as the new incoming Secretary of Department of Corrections. Where does he fit into all of this?
So he was the secretary under Governor Tommy Thompson, one of Governor Thompson's secretaries. He's being brought back now to replace Ed Wall, who we talked about is leaving. He is has a reputation as having been able to work with rank-and-file correctional officers very well. They've been there have been morale issues at the Department of Corrections separate from what's going on at Lincoln Hills because of some staffing shortages. So initially he's getting a very good reception. Obviously he's got a big set of problems that he's going to be dealing with. But so far from what we've seen from outside observers, the corrections people internally within corrections are seeing him as a good change for the department.
We'll leave it there. Patrick, thanks for bringing us up to date.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
That's Patrick Marley, State Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He was with us to share the latest details of the Lincoln Hills Correctional Institution scandal.
Happy Leap Day. February 29th only comes around once every 4 years, so we're celebrating today with some science.
Gemma Tarlak is back with us to explain why we have Leap Day, and she's going to share some other cool science news along the way. She's a senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back.
Hello. Happy Leap Day to you both.
Well, it's a fun holiday. Of course, we're exhausted from all of our Leap Day celebrations here, Gemma, but what's the reason for the day? Why do we have Leap Day?
Well, it's, the universe is just really sometimes inconvenient for us puny humans, basically. Now, obviously, the Earth's rotation takes 24 hours. We, figured that out, divided the day into 24 hours, and that works out great for us. However, the Earth does not take an even amount of days to go around the sun. It takes 365.2422. There's that little bit extra. So over time, that little bit extra builds up, and every 4 years, we have about 0.97 extra of a day because of that, because the going around the sun doesn't equal an exact number of days. So they add that extra day on. One of the things I think is interesting is it's not a full day. It's that 0.97 of a day. So that means that one rule you may not be familiar with, and this has been going around now for centuries, it's leap year every year that is divisible by 4, except for years that are both divisible by 100, but not divisible by 400. So what? I know your head.
Who came up with that?
Well, it's the way we even out the fact that we build up a 0.97 of a day, but we take a whole day every leap day. We add a whole day to the calendar when we're really only 0.97 of a day in deficit, if that makes any sense. So basically, the year 2000 was a leap year, but the year 1700, 1800, and even 1900 were not leap years. And that's how we make up for the fact that we're adding a whole day every 4 years, even though we've accumulated only 0.97 of a day.
I don't know, Gemma. It sounds kind of Byzantine. Why can't we just forget leap days and just keep going and pretend we don't know about the 0.97?
Well, because pretty soon you're going to have like February and it's going to be like 50-some degrees and, oh, no, wait.
But wait a minute. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, over time we would get more and more off. And then, you know, we'd have to be around for a while and maybe it would be like, you know, I don't know, our insect overlords or whoever is in charge in 10,000 years. But, you know, over time things would get really off if you're still dividing things by the seasons. And, you know, the fact is I lived in the Southern Hemisphere for a while. So to me, it's, you know, yeah, sure, December is summer. So I'd like completely abandoned seasons. But yes, to keep kind of everything on track, we just do that. We add a full day until we build up all that time, and then we just don't have a leap year.
Well, before we move on, the obvious solution, it seems to me, is to slow down the Earth, right? We just get some, you know, super rocket ships that are beyond our current human capacity, push the other way, and just slow that orbit down so it's exactly, you know, the days and the years line up, right?
It's almost too easy.
Explain to me the flaw in my thinking here.
Yeah, I think that would cause some other big problems that
big.
We don't even want to get into.
Huh. That's an interesting thought, though, Rob. You should run with that.
Yeah. In my future career as a crazed supervillain, I am all over that.
Yeah, email NASA. Let me know how that works out for you.
I think it's time to move on.
I think probably, yeah.
There's nowhere to go with that. So, Gemma, there's some new genetic studies about the first Americans that have caused kind of a stir. What do the studies say?
Yeah, this is a really interesting thing, and it's interesting for a number of reasons. You know, because we don't have any historical record from who and when settled the Americas first, all kinds of crazy ideas have come up. Some of them make a lot of sense. Some of them do not. My favorite one was, like, people kayaking over from France. It's like, no, that did not happen. But what they have, they've done some genetic studies now, because we have enough ancient genomes sequenced that we can compare them to each other, to current Native Americans, and we can really start to see the relationships and understand who is related to who, when all this genetic drift, this kind of natural background of mutations that happens in our DNA that becomes kind of a clock to tell us when certain events happen, we can really kind of get a much better picture. And they're finding out that, yes, First Americans, Native Americans, they are all descended from a group of people who came over the Beringian land bridge. They arrived there from Siberia about 23,000 years ago, and then they moved on when the ice melted enough to keep going eastward, basically, into the Americas. And that was probably about 15,000 years ago. So this genetic study really confirmed what most archaeologists and anthropologists had thought. But we can now definitively point to the DNA and say, yes, you could see it written in the genes of Native Americans that they are related to a wave of immigration that came over from Siberia into the Americas, arriving about 15,000 years ago and then spreading south and eastward. What's really interesting is that there's a separate genetic study that came out that found in South America, there are groups of indigenous people who have a very unique genetic signature, and the only other people in the world who have that signature are found in places like Australia, in Indonesia, and there's one tiny island in Southeast Asia. And we're trying to figure out how those genes got all the way across the Pacific, because if they had been just, you know, boating across the Pacific, if that's how you want to think of it, we would have seen that signature in between, like, Australia and South America. We would be seeing it in the Pacific Islands. Mm. And the fact that it's not there suggests that they came up through Siberia with that other major wave.
And is this
are you still there, or are you doing the leap year math there?
This part of what we discovered from Siberia, that these mystery genes, these genes from Australia and that neighborhood were present in Siberia, so they could have come over the land bridge then? They didn't have to come across the ocean?
Right, because if they came across the ocean, we should see that genetic signature showing up in places like Tahiti and Fiji, and we don't see it anywhere else. So they're thinking that Australia and Indonesia and Southeast Asia, these little pockets where the genetic signature exists, they actually came up through Siberia. And, you know, it may sound a little bit crazy, but when you actually look at these ancient genetic signatures that they're looking at, for example, they found that there's a 24,000-year-old genome of a young boy from Siberia. And they found specific genetic signatures there that are associated with Europeans today. So that tells us that the folks in Siberia were a lot more cosmopolitan They probably traveled more widely, interacted with larger groups of people than we had originally thought.
So is this one pretty much put to bed, or what needs to be filled in for this to be pretty solid?
Well, the great thing about science is nothing is ever really 100% put to bed, because, of course, now you have scientists looking at these studies, trying to replicate them, looking at the methodology, and that's how science works. It's always asking the question, can you prove this, and then can I disprove this? So right now, this is about as certain as you can get in science, but, good scientists never definitively say, yes, we have come to the conclusion, we have solved this. Because there's always room to improve upon a theory.
Talking to Gemma Tarlak from Discover Magazine about some of the latest science news. And Gemma, 100th birthday of the National Park Service this year. And you pointed us toward an unknown fact about national parks. They serve as, in a way, outdoor laboratories for scientists. What kind of things are we seeing in national parks that are helping advance science?
Yeah, I think a lot of us think of national parks as this incredible resource, scenic beauty, vacation destination, a way to get out into the outdoors. But the fact is, when this land was set aside, it was set aside and really created like these very precious time capsules. And just for example, when you look at geysers, did you know half of the geysers in the world have been destroyed for one reason or another? But we can still go to Yellowstone and scientists can still study the geysers there because they've been in this protected environment. And that's true. There's so many different projects going on, so many different long-running experiments. Just for example, they're looking at things like, the Everglades in Florida. They have really been under tremendous stress from developers kind of taking their water away. So now they're looking at ways to restore that natural, what they call a river of grass, the natural flow of the water, which has really been massively compromised due to development. And they're looking at things like in New York, there's a national seashore called Fire Island. And they can look at the dunes there and follow and track how those dunes evolve and compare their evolution when something like Superstorm Sandy comes through. They can look at that and learn a lot about how sand dunes form, how they protect coastal areas, and they can take that and apply that to areas that, you might have a vacation home in or you might be living in, and they might actually be able to protect you and your home better just because of what they have learned from the National Seashore at Fire Island. And there are just hundreds of these experiments all over from, Alaska all the way down through the Everglades. So it's just really a fascinating and wonderful thing. It's not just a pretty picture when you go to a national park. There are long-running science experiments that are crucial.
Yeah, we think about the parks as, examples of conservation and preservation, but should we also be more aware of the science that's going on there and the importance of that in these ecosystems?
Absolutely, absolutely. They're super precious. And if I could get on my soapbox for a minute, a lot of times I love going to national parks, and a lot of times you see those signs, please stay on the trail, please do this, please do that. Those signs are not there to be, like a third grade teacher slapping you on the wrist if you're naughty. Those signs are there because you can actually jeopardize very fragile ecosystems that we don't have anywhere else anymore.
And are scientists publishing a lot of material based on what goes on in national parks?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And a lot of these things especially are very long-running experiments. Some of them are a single season. Some of them are ongoing. There's this one wonderful experiment currently going on in the Southern California and Nevada area where they are basically replicating a count of species that was done 100 years ago. So it's just tremendous the amount of data that are sitting in our national parks that we just can't find elsewhere. And, they're real-world applications, especially with climate change. We're learning how to protect all of our country better just by the resources that we have in our national parks.
Fascinating stuff. Well, Gemma, thanks. And I assume our leap year presents are on their way in the mail.
Yeah.
we'll wait for the next 400-year cycle, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, Gemma, thanks a lot. As always, that was Gemma Tarlak, senior editor at Discover Magazine, based in Waukesha.